der Automation Podcast. Herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge über Technologien, Trends und Nutzen von Automation.
Wir, das sind Kurt Bettenhausen und ich, Thomas Tauchnitz. Wir freuen uns darüber, dass ihr in dieser Folge dabei seid. Interessante Gäste, aktuelle Themen und offene Gespräche sind das, was ihr von uns erwarten könnt.
A very warm welcome to our guest Vimal Mahindru, IEC Vice President and Chair of the IEC Standardization Management Board, and I have to admit, our first real international guest in this podcast. Dear Vimal, please introduce yourself to our audience.
Thank you. Guten Tag, Kurt and Thomas, and guten Tag to all your guests and listeners. For me, it's a privilege to be here and actually expanding the frontiers of this podcast. So I feel a bit under pressure, but also really excited and privileged that I'm part of this. As an introduction, I come from India, in northern India, from a small, sleepy town, which I still find heavenly because it is still a little untouched by technology. And coming from those humble areas of India, where life is still slower than in most of urban India or across the world, it's taught me a lot about how technology can shape our future. I did my studies in my hometown, had the privilege of traveling overseas for my higher studies for my MBA, worked in the US for a couple of years, and then came back to my family business, which was actually about manufacturing low voltage electrical equipment. Got deeply involved with it in India. And from that point on, I was in contact with several German companies, small, mid-sized German companies, actually to get licenses for German technology to build some products in India. So I'm fairly familiar with Germany from early 90s onward, when as a young engineer, I would go there across to Müller or Mennekes and Dupke and several other smaller companies, all family-owned businesses. And because we were family-owned business ourselves, we could, let's say, connect very well with our German counterparts. And so the business grew very well. In 2010, I sold the business to a multinational and worked for some time with that multinational. But along the way, I was pulled in by the Indian government to try and address standards, especially for microgrids, for rural electrification, which was a big challenge for India around 2012 and 13. We had a large population which was not having access to electricity at all. From that point on, I've been involved with IEC. And today, I think that I'm a reborn person. So my life as an entrepreneur, as a family business person is over. And now I'm 100% deeply entrenched in the world of standardization.
Thank you, Vimal. That's a nice combination of industrial background and standardization, which I think is important. Could you please explain what IEC stands for? Maybe some people don't know the abbreviation, and what the organization has been doing for more than 100 years.
Yeah, thank you very much. Glad you mentioned 100 years, because there are not too many organizations in the world which are actually older than the United Nations. And so IEC is one of those, born in 1906. IEC itself stands for International Electrotechnical Commission. The word electrotechnical started from the times when IEC was born, because the world was discovering this innovation known as electricity. Thomas Edison was instrumental in bringing electricity in a commercial sense to the world by setting up the first electrical network in southern Manhattan, and there was immediately a need for building some coherence around what does safety mean? Electricity can be dangerous also. What is safety? How do we measure it? What is amperage? What is the very definition of an ampere or a volt or resistance in ohms? So there were a lot of things required, but also there was another thing that many manufacturers were only single product manufacturers. There was a cable manufacturer or a bulb manufacturer or a switch manufacturer. But how do you make sure that they were all interoperable, that all switches could work with all the cables? And as the world of electricity was growing, there was this need for interoperability also. So with these two objectives, the IEC was born to bring standards between industry stakeholders so that everyone would adhere to one definition and one set of norms for the whole community. It started with a few countries as members, but today there are more than 170 countries which are following IEC standards. It started from interoperability and safety that I mentioned, but of course it immediately grew to include also performance of electrical equipment. What is the lifetime of operations of any equipment? This started impacting trade. And so global trade was directly influenced by which countries were following which standards of the IEC. And so global trade in electrical equipment was enhanced through the use of IEC standards. Then came the age of renewables. In the last 20, 25 years, we see that renewables are extensively being used. And today, the big agenda and mandate that we see across the world, in every conference that I'm invited to, we are always talking about digital transformation, sustainability, and AI. And these three topics are actually at the heart of some of the latest set of standards that IEC is coming out with. Oh, so where is this whole thing headed? Part of our strategy in IEC, which we kind of recrafted in 2021 and put in place in 2022, is about creating an all-electric and connected society. And so this is the reason for existence of IEC, addressing sustainability, digital transformation, but addressing it to enable a world which is connected, sustainable, and more efficient, leading to a net zero, or let's say a sustainable community for the future.
Thank you very much, Vimal. Now, IEC is not alone in the world. We also have ISO. And sometimes there is a lot of confusion about the global standards because they both have a significant impact, IEC and ISO global standards on automation. Where do you see major similarities and also major differences between IEC and ISO?
It's interesting you ask this. I'm not sure if you are aware, ISO was actually born with five members of IEC staff being co-opted to work on the beginning of ISO, and this was in 1947, almost 41 years after IEC was born. The whole idea was that standardization is not required in electrical world alone, but there is more need for standardization even beyond products that use electricity or work with electronics. These are things like, for example, wood, cement, paint, you know, so everything has to be standardized. So that's where ISO was born. There are a lot of similarities in both IEC and ISO because both are Geneva-based multi-country membership organizations, which means that both organizations deal directly with countries and not with individual group of stakeholders. They're not looking at regional memberships. They're not looking at, let's say, corporate memberships, but a wider audience. but from each country. Both work with on some of the fundamentals of the UN also, things like one country, one vote. So one member, one vote. It's not that I come from a very big country or a more powerful country, so I'll get 2 votes or 10 votes. Everyone has the same voice. I think this kind of democratization of technology is at the heart of IEC and also of ISO. Both organizations, especially in the way we develop standards, are similar because our rules and processes, especially for standards writing, what we internally call directives, but it's like a handbook of how we will develop standards. This handbook is common on both ISO and IEC side, and we jointly own this manual and the process, and we jointly keep on updating this also. We also coordinate with each other the work that we both organizations do to make sure that we are not sending any confusing signals or any overlapping standards, or God forbid, leaving some space in vacuum and saying, hey, neither ISO is doing nor IEC is doing, and we don't know who's going to take care of that. Because end of the day, these two organizations have this kind of a country mandate to develop standards. So that's where IEC and ISO are similar. Where we are different, clearly IEC sticks to its, what I like to call the envelope, or our play field is clearly electricity, electronics, and digital. And that's why I say the all-electric and connected society. And ISO does things other than this. You know, in some areas, you will immediately wonder how we manage electronics, because electronics and software is kind of getting embedded into everything. For example, cars were analog devices 50 years back, but today there is, I don't know, a large percentage of the value of a car lying in its electronics and software. So do we call a car as a computer with wheels, or do we call it a traditional car with a computer on board? So regardless of which way you look at it, both are true. And so there is a kind of convergence of technologies. And that's why both IEC and ISO, where they are similar, is we jointly develop some standards. And we have some committees known as joint technical committees, which are jointly governed by IEC and ISO together for development of certain areas. For example, you could think of AI or electronics, JPEGs, you know, there are a lot of things which are done in joint technical committees. Quantum computing. There is something now happening on smart cities. Now, smart cities have a lot of data and digital technologies, but it's also about supplying water and sanitation and transportation. How do you put all this together? And that's where IEC and ISO jointly work on some of these new areas of standardization. That's where we are similar.
Thank you. That sounds well organized and well structured. Very good. Bimal, there is a standardization management board at IEC, abbreviated SMB. What is the mandate of that team?
Great question. The SMB actually manages the standardization process and the standards catalog. Now, what do I mean by standardization process? Whenever a new standard is required, you know, this need may be felt in a specific country. And when it is felt, how do we take it to actually a published document, which is then circulated and adopted by the whole world? There is a certain process how a proposal for a new standard is made, how the proposal is adopted by the various member countries, how then a committee is formed which will oversee that text and try and resolve any gaps, or if there are, let's say, differing positions on something that has to be written. It could very naturally happen that you in Germany may think differently on a certain aspect of something that is being standardized from the way I or maybe folks in another country are looking at it. But this has to be resolved because the standard has to lead to one document for the whole world. And those differences are then settled within committees till such time the text is agreed by all, voted by all, and ready for publication. So this whole process from a proposal coming in to publication of an international standard is overseen by IEC. Now, I am presently chairing the board, but it's obvious I am not an expert in all these technologies. But a secret is, I'm not an expert on any of these technologies. So don't tell anyone that I told you. But the fact is that our job is at the SMB not to be experts at technology, but more to be experts at knowing how to ensure that regardless of technology, we put the same process in place and make sure that everyone's voice is heard. If there are concerns from any sector or a country or a domain, then those concerns are addressed. So that end of the day, the standard serves the users who are actually going to be in the field and using it. That's where the SMB's role is. Beyond that, of course, it's about building foresight. SMB has several specialized groups from within its board members and with some uniquely skilled guests who help us build a foresight into what's required 5 years or 10 years down the line. For example, quantum came out of one such discussion. Drones and you know, piloted or unpiloted are another new area of standardization. Space technologies for civilian use, these are new areas. So SMB gets involved in reviewing, thinking through this, and we have a specialized group called the Hot Topics Radar, and they keep looking at what's beyond the horizon, which we think that IEC must get involved in. Of course, we get involved in implementing the strategy of the IEC. The current strategy of IEC has 3 pillars, for example, and these pillars are about digital transformation, about sustainability, and building trust. All three are directly impacted by the work of IEC and SMB. And so we actively get involved with projects related to sustainability, digital transformation, and taking the IEC's message of the platform that we have, the egalitarian platform, to the community. I myself, every year, am invited to about 20 to 25 different conferences where I get involved to speak and take the message of IEC so that people continue to build trust on this. Another important thing which has more come about in the last 15 years or so, if you've seen, and this is not only in Germany or Europe, but across the world, I'm seeing increasingly regulators beginning to bring in regulations around what we do. Sustainability is one such area, which I know that in Europe, in Germany, in India also, even when standards don't exist, the policymakers are very clearly giving us a direction as to what they expect the industry and all stakeholders to do. So we are beginning to see a change even in IEC, that we are more and more listening to regulators in advance so that we can sensitize our communities as well as embed future regulations into our standards right away, so that we are in a way preempting future regulations by saying, okay, let the industry help us address some of the concerns that policymakers and regulators may have. This is increasingly becoming important, because you, God forbid, if different regulators all over the world were making their own set of regulations without coherence or without synchronization with each other, how would you and I even begin to export our products? We can't produce in one country but comply with each country's different regulations. So this is something that we are increasingly seeing, that by engaging with regulators, we are able to bring some kind of a sensitization and harmonization around regulatory thinking between some of the members. This is relatively new, but I see this increasing rather than decreasing in the future.
Thank you, Vimal. This is already an almost perfect way to our next question here. Considering the global footprint and impact of the IEC, and you already shared a great example, what are major challenges and opportunities for IEC in the next decade? Things you are expecting to change, to be modified, to be impacted also by IEC, but also have an impact on IEC?
You make me think, because interestingly, the challenges that I see, I can, you know, clearly see four major areas. But also I find that the opportunities are somewhere embedded in the challenges itself. Number one, it is digital transformation. Clearly, this is top of my mind these days, because we see a digitalization of various sectors across us. You know, the financial sector, and I don't know if you have been following the news back home in India also here, we've digitally transformed our whole country when it comes to the financial sector. Okay, India alone is having more digital transactions financially every single day than any other country in the world. Now, with this kind of pace of digitalization, can standardization still be PDFs and printed copies? No. The industry is expecting a lot more. How do we create value for our industry, our regulators, stakeholders, through digital transformation? But at the same time, not everyone is as cut and polished, let's say, as Germany is. So how do you take the global community along? So digitally transform the IEC and its products, but also make sure that those who are, let's say, a few steps behind, they also continue to increase their pace and join this digitalized future of the standardization world. This is one. Second, I don't need to say again, but the sustainability. You know, electricity is at the heart of almost every development we see around us. It is hard for me to come up with a single application or a use case where I can say we don't need electricity, electronics, or software. That is how embedded it is. You know, people tell me about organic small farm that there may be. But okay, you can have a small farm, but how do you take that farm produce to the table where you're going to sell it? Even in the supply chain, you will use electricity. So how do you make this whole need for electricity more sustainable? I grew up in a small town, and without a care, I could drink water from any tap, river, rivulet, or lake. Today, I can't say the same about our children or our grandchildren. So what kind of legacy are we leaving behind? So that's why sustainability is the second one. We need to address this together. This is also connected to waste management, circular economy, and how we address it through the standardization. Be sure principles of eco-design are going to be more and more embedded and entrenched in standards. How do we prepare our community for that? I think that's the second one. The third is about capacity building. You know, how do you increase the capacity of every country to not only receive standards, but also to contribute to standards? In Germany, for example, you know the German use case for everything better than I would know sitting in India. But I know better about the Indian use case of electricity, electronics, software, how we do it, how we use it, what is the ambient condition. But unless I come to the IEC and talk about my use case, things wouldn't happen. And this is the issue in 170 countries. How do we make sure that IEC standards are robust enough and yet resilient enough to deliver value to Germany, India, Rwanda, Burkina Faso, Indonesia, Tonga Islands, and I'm just giving these names just as random examples, not to be specific. But this is about capacity building, how the local populations in each country can understand how to be part of this standardization process so that we can come up with comprehensive standards. Fourth is something which you and I and all of us sometimes worry about, but also cannot be very sure of, is foreseeing what the needs of the future are. You know, I talked about the hot topic radar. It is still a radar for the future. You and I, even today, don't know what are going to be the needs down the line. So building a better radar, building a better foresight process to make sure that we don't miss the opportunities and we don't want to leave the society and community shortchanged, that they needed some standards and yet IEC was absent from that just because we missed to see that this would be a need of the society. So I see these four as the challenges that I see, the big ticket items in front of the SMB that we need to address. And within these itself are the opportunities. If you think about it, doing a great job with digital transformation is actually going to transform the world. So it's not really about Germany or India or some of the developed countries. It is about the whole global community gaining from this. I'm really excited about what IEC is doing with digital transformation, because I think the way we are already working toward XMLization, as I say, converting PDF documents to XML and taking from XML to smart standards, and thereby further down the stream, leading from smart standards, actually getting embedded into the manufacturing processes and services used across the community. That's the future. And I'm very excited, and that's the opportunity that I look at. Sustainability is another one, not because of India alone, but worldwide, every government, I'm sure in Germany, you are as concerned about sustainability as everyone else is. So how do we begin to address this? IEC is already doing some standards, but I see a huge opportunity in building a complete catalog of standards which will comprehensively address it in all its facets. Similarly, when I talk about this sustainability, is the need for net zero energy buildings, piloted, unpiloted aircraft that I mentioned earlier, bridging the digital divide between those who are already at the cutting edge of digitalization and those who are not there. All of this connects very well with the UN SDGs. So somewhere enabling policymakers in various countries to use standards as a tool of addressing their UN SDG targets and goals. There is a clear link between the work we do and addressing many of the UN SDGs. This I see as the dual aspect of the challenges and the opportunities that we have. Sorry, long answer. I should have been shorter, but I get carried away on this one.
And it shows that you have enough jobs to do in your life and for the successors as well. Vimal, let's take a closer look to your home country, India. How important is standardization for the future development of India?
Standardization increasingly is being seen as pivotal to the future. I'm not sure if you've seen some of the latest news coming from India. We are now the world's most populous country. Our population is more than that of China's. And yet we are a developing economy. We are very developed in some aspects, but still developing at a fast rate. In the last 10 years, from let's say 2013-14 to let's say 2023, in those 10 years, about 28% of our population came out from poverty to being better. This is about 248 million Indians came out of poverty into a better life. 248 million people, think about it, it's more than today's population of Germany, Italy, Spain, France combined. All these people, it's one thing to bring them out of poverty, but also to give them good employment opportunities, opportunities for growth and a better life, lifestyle, and living standards. That's a challenge for our country. For this, there is already a lot of effort in bringing new employment opportunities to the country. India has one of the biggest programs anywhere in the world to bring foreign direct investment into manufacturing and setting up new manufacturing facilities in India. So India is actually a kind of a boom town. Even though our economy has slowed down, it is still growing at about 6.5%. This is the fastest growing large economy in the world. We are the fourth largest economy already, but still growing at 6.5%. Main reason is that the government is very conscious of increasing the manufacturing sector where there is the opportunity to have increased employment. You may also have read that many manufacturing companies are having a China plus one strategy. Almost 30 to 20 years back, many countries made a beeline to China, which was very welcome. It's perfect, you know, you can set up there and it was working very well. And now they're beginning to realize, hey, do I need a second base also? Or do I put all my manufacturing in China? And so this is where India is also gaining. You may have also read that last year, Apple set up one of its biggest plants anywhere in the world in India. And don't be surprised if your current Apple phone, if you bought it in the last 12 months, or you're going to buy one of the latest ones, it'll be made in India. So this is the change that the government is incentivizing. Personally, I find this is very exciting because it's a very vibrant city. I promise you, if you come to India, you will never have a dull moment, a quiet moment, or a private moment. I say that this in a lighter way.
Thank you very much, Vimal. One of your previous answers made me curious about some further insights. And you mentioned correctly, I can hardly look deep into India. Out from the outside perspective, out of Germany. So referring back to standards, which challenges are similar and which are very different regarding the development and the application of standards in India compared to the rest of the world?
That's an interesting question. I would think that like any good developed economy like Germany, India is similar in the sense that we are also trying to make sense of AI, cybersecurity, privacy, and how do we balance that vis-a-vis the conveniences that we get? I use Google Maps all the time, personally, but I also worry at times that how private is my life, because there is, in many data centers, I'm leaving my digital footprint on every meter of the way, wherever I'm going. So these are some of the concerns which I've seen across the world in every economy, developed or developing. Sustainability is another one. In Germany, you know, when you are worried about pollution along the Rhine River and you start to put direct current on the boats and barges which go up and down the Rhine River, similar are the concerns in India as to how do we improve the quality of life along our rivers. Where we are different is perhaps the scale. India's scale is totally different, you know. So, and my answer may go beyond mere standards and standardization world. How do we bring well-being to all the population? How do we distribute the wealth and opportunities to everyone? How do we engage everyone in a way that they feel, yes, this is me and my life is improving and gaining from whatever is happening in the country? Those are some of the challenges where we are very different from Germany. Social security is not present in India. We don't have very robust retirement schemes. We don't have universal health care. And yet, we are totally committed to providing health care to all. How do we do it? It's not a small job. The government is doing an admirable job in trying to tackle some of these big issues. This is giving birth to new innovations in India. I'm not sure if you're aware, internet bandwidth, mobile phone costs per month for communications within the country or the region are among the lowest in the world in India. We have a population of 1.4 billion people. I understand there are about 1.1 billion mobile phones in the country, or mobile phone connections. So on one hand, we are very digitalized, and yet we don't have electricity for all the people in our country. We are rapidly electrifying, but do we have more than enough electricity? Is it all sustainable? No. So complex challenges, but we're trying to address them through using technology in a unique way. I'll give you another example. In India, we have the Unified Payments Interface, which is UPI, which is an Indian innovation on how we do financial transactions. It is today one of the largest platforms in the world, and many countries are adopting this simply because it is fast, efficient, uses QR codes, it's multi-device, multi-platform, doesn't care whether it is Android or Microsoft or something else, it works everywhere. And today, the government also has added an innovation that you can have the poorest of the poor can have a bank account even with a zero balance. So that once they have a bank account, they will be inspired to receive their next payment or whatever work they do, and they get paid, it comes digitally into their account. So a lot of things are happening which perhaps in Germany or in many of the developed countries you would not even perhaps visualize this could be a need. But technology, I must say, is at the heart of a lot of the transformation you will see in India.
Vimal, you have the chance, we have the chance that you add some additional points which you like to address and which we didn't ask about.
There's a lot I would love to say and share. But at the heart of what I want to share is, I think sometimes I worry. One of my concerns is, what kind of world are we leaving for our grandchildren? I can bet you and I, and most of our listeners who are already in the professional world, have lived a generally good life. If we look at our childhood days, I never had water out of a plastic bottle. Never. We never needed to have filtered water simply because whatever came was clean. Today, we see piles and piles of trash, waste, miles and miles of plastic debris floating in the sea. I have a cute little grandson who's 18 months, really adorable, playful kid. And I wonder, what kind of world are we leaving for them? Can I promise to him that he will grow up, that he can drink water from anywhere without a care, and he will get clean air regardless which city of the world he may be in? It's not an issue for India or Germany alone. It's for all of us. And my feeling is that the issue of sustainability is at the heart of what we are doing for the future. If we can take care of sustainability, that would be great. Sustainability does not mean sustainability only of the planet. Maybe the best way is stop using electricity and technology, and you know, there is no pollution, so life will go on. But that's not real sustainability. Sustainability to me is sustainability of the planet, sustainability of the whole society, and sustainability of businesses and enterprises. So it's like a three-layer wedding cake. The planet has to be sustainable, of course, because we all live on it, we eat from it, and we give back to Earth. But society, everyone's healthcare, education, poverty, food, needs, you know, have to be addressed. And then business enterprises, your and my organizations, IEC, international organizations, private enterprises, they all have to succeed. Once we are able to be sustainable on these three axes, nothing can stop us. But if one of these is, we consider as this is at the heart and I need to take care of this, I don't care of the rest, I think it will be a suboptimal future, and which will lead to imbalances.
Now we have reached the end of our dialogue. Vimal, what are your three most important key messages or takeaways for our listeners?
Thank you. Well, the first is very, very obvious. Please get involved with standards and standardization. Demand more, expect more, but also contribute more. Just demanding more doesn't help. And wherever you see an opportunity that standards could be brought in, and it, some innovation, some idea that can help the world, talk about standards. That's the fastest way I know that you can take some innovation in one small pocket in one place to the world in less than 3 years. That's the power of standards. The second, think about electricity and an all-electric connected society. Would you want to ferry coal and oil from one place to another so that you're burning oil to carry oil to another place? Or would you rather go to an all-electric society where you're burning oil or coal at one place, but then everything else in the world is taking place with electricity? The moment you do that, you can then start creating microgrids. Think about it as a multiple grids which are connected with each other, so that there is local generation of electricity through solar, wind, and diversified catalog of technologies that you have. All of this, by the way, is still IEC standards. But third, which is, let's say, to me, pivotal and what is close to my heart, is sustainability. Either you are sustainable or what? Or you're unsustainable. And that's not a good solution for us. We have only one planet and only one plan, which is to succeed, to be sustainable, because there is no planet B and no plan B on this one.
Thank you very much, Vimal. It was really great having you as our guest today.
Thank you very much. Thanks to you, and good luck to all the listeners.
Wir freuen uns, wenn ihr auch bei der nächsten Folge wieder dabei seid. Bis zum nächsten Mal beim Automation Podcast.
Vielen Dank, dass ihr heute interessiert dabei wart. Uns hat es Spaß gemacht, euch hoffentlich auch.